The World Rock Countdown with George Ron.
This is the World Rock Countdown with Jason Heartless of the Ted Nugent Band. How's it going, Jason?
Hey, man, what's going on?
Oh, not too much. Just excited to hear more about you and your career. You've been blessed with a musical talent that people only dream they could have. You started playing gigs at the age of 5. Did you ever think that your life would pan out this way?
Yeah, you know, it's been a crazy, crazy ride. And, you know, I've been very, very, very lucky to have, known the right people at the right time and be able to play with, you know, some of the best musicians in the world. And, you know, it makes my job easier, you know. But yeah, it's definitely been a crazy, crazy ride.
Back in 2002, Mountain drummer Corky Laing decided to work with you. How did this come about?
Well, my dad was a professional musician, and his band used to tour a lot with Ace Frehley back in the early 90s, and he became really close with Ace and Richie Scarlett, who was his guitar player at the time. And, those two became really tight, so much so that when I was born, my dad made Richie my godfather. So, you know, that whole Ace Frehley camp is very, very connected to, you know, the roots of where I have been able to get to today. And after Ace rejoined Kiss in 1996, Richie ended up joining Mountain to play bass for Mountain. And at a very early age, I would watch videos of Mountain, and I just was like in awe of Corky Laing. And so much so that when I started playing my first gigs, I used to cover Nantucket Sleigh Ride and Mississippi Queen. And my dad, you know, filmed some videos, sent it to Richie, and Richie ended up showing it to Corky. And Corky ended up calling my dad up one day and was like, "Hey, look, you know, I'm in Toronto. You guys are in Detroit. I'd love to come down and work with this kid a little bit." And, that's kind of spawned a long, long time relationship between myself and Corky, we did my first solo record together, which was really kind of just, it wasn't so much a solo record, but more or less an excuse for Corky to almost mentor me through a recording session. And, now we fast forward to 2019, and now Corky's signed to my record label, Prudential Music Group, and this, sometime this year we're going to be releasing Corky's brand new Corky Laing Mountain record that's, you know, absolutely phenomenal.
I can't wait to hear that. Now, working with one of your idols growing up, what did he teach you about the craft of drumming?
Well, you know, it was more or less of, you know, building your musical ear, you know, being able to identify, you know, groove and, you know, how to act in a recording studio and, you know, how to play to a click. And, you know, when you're on the spot, you got to think on your toes and, you know, come up with something, you know, really, really quick. And, you know, looking back myself, mainly as a studio musician, you know, that has really, really, really been a key fundamental part of, that helped mold, my career as a studio player.
And I can really tell from your playing and the recordings, even though the last Ted Nugent album, The Music Made Me Do It, you said was recorded in 5 hours, at least your part. You have some serious feel to your playing that people can actually feel. Is it important to have feel and some type of dynamic to your live or recorded playing?
Absolutely. And, I've really, really been I'm 24 years old, but all of my favorite musicians, all my favorite bands are from the 60s, 70s, and 80s. So I cater a lot of my style to this old school way of playing. You know, guys like Corky Laing, guys like Jeff Beccaro from Toto, guys like Vinnie Colaiuta and Hal Blaine and Jim Keltner and Jim Gordon and all these studio players over the years. And, you know, unfortunately, they've kind of, as time goes on, they've slowly kind of dwindled away. And, drummers aren't as known. You know, they're not as familiar to younger up and coming drummers. So it's definitely been something that, you know, as me coming up in the industry, I've tried to pass on to younger musicians. It's like, look, these are the guys that were the forefathers of, you know, groove and playing, and, you know, playing a groove is what really, really, really affects the style of the song. Whether, you know, you can have the greatest melody in the world, but if you got a drummer that, you know, can't lay down just a solid groove and is playing all over the place, not really a great melody. So, you know, really catering to this old school way of playing is really, really been a key factor of what I've tried to, you know, accomplish.
Is one of the key factors having an open mind going into a recording session or a jam session?
Absolutely. Absolutely. You know, I always take it as, you know, whomever is hiring me to come in to do the record or playing on the commercial or, you know, play on, you know, whatever the hell it is, they're the ones paying you. So if you come in with a chip on your shoulder and, you know, it's all about me, and, you know, telling the client, you know, that's paying you, saying, you know, no, that's not good. Do what I want to do. Well, then you're not going to get called back. So I've always taken the mentality of, you know, kind of sit there, do exactly what you're told. Obviously, you know, you got to put in your own little flavor, but at the end of the day, you have to play what's right for the music. And, unfortunately, there's a lot of drummers out there that don't really look at it that way. And, you know, they never end up getting called back on a gig, you know, because they're not team players. They're not there for the song. They're there for themselves.
Yeah. And they're also there just to play the song, you know, just get through it, right?
Exactly.
I've also wanted to ask you, you said Corky Laing was one of your influences. Can you tell me like two other drummers maybe that are also an influence to you?
Well, you know, it's part of the question I get asked the most of anything is, well, who's your favorite drummer? And it's probably the hardest one because I've taken the idea of, you know, should never have one favorite drummer. You should have 1,000 favorite drummers. But, you know, I have my core, you know, top 10 drummers that were really impactful in my playing, Corky being one of them. Probably my earliest influence was Mick Tucker from The Sweet. And because that's my dad's favorite band of all time. So I grew up on that early 70s glam rock of The Sweet and T-Rex. And growing up, I mean, that guy was just absolutely phenomenal, extremely underrated. But you also guys got, you know, Jeff Beccaro was a huge, huge one. Stuart Copeland, Anton Figg, who luckily I was able to sort of be mentored by in a recording session in 2005 and taught me how to, you know, chart music. And Todd Zuckerman from Styx, who's a dear friend, Eric Singer from Kiss, who I've known since I was about 7 years old, been a huge influence and mentor on me personally and playing. So it's I've been very, very lucky to have been able to work with a lot of my influences and become, you know, dear friends with them.
Now, you're a very young guy, and obviously you have played a fair amount of gigs. And with being a live drummer, how do you keep in good shape? I mean, I would assume that drumming is one of the most strenuous pieces of the band. Like, to be a drummer in a band, very strenuous because you're always moving multiple limbs, multiple actions. And you see a lot of the original drummers of many big bands that we've come to love have to step back and let a young gun like yourself take over the reins because their bodies can't handle it anymore. So how do you protect the longevity of your drumming career?
Well, it's you know, it is a tough one, you know, and especially, you know, when I'm not on the road, I'm in the studio, and that's obviously a completely different ball game, you know, but, you know, making sure you're eating healthy on the road, staying hydrated and, you know, kind of keeping limber and not just sitting around doing nothing all day is very, very important. And especially when you're off the road as well. And, it's funny. I luckily over the years, I'm a big hockey fan and I've become friends with a couple of the Detroit Red Wings. And, we sit here and talk about, you know, comparing what we do. And, you know, I don't really do the lifting weights or anything like that because I don't want to strain anything. But, you know, cardio is a big, big factor of making sure that you're physically active and, you know, you're not on stage feeling like you're a keel over because you're, you know, running out of energy. So always making sure that you're, you know, in shape and kind of prepared and, of course, always warming up and staying playing, you know, all the time is very important.
I can definitely sympathize with you. The cardio part, I used to play in a band. A lot of us, our music was so fast that like we'd be pooped by the second song. So definitely it goes all the way around. The singer needs to be in shape, somehow cardiovascular, fitness has to involve every person of that band to make it run like a fine-oiled machine. Now, let's talk about working on both sides of the music industry, being the music business part and performing, touring. Can that be stressful? Are you always busy, and how do you manage that part of your life?
I work nonstop. it's a tough one because I've got a year left at Berklee College of Music for a music business degree. So, you know, I'm shuffling studio stuff, touring stuff, running my company and going to college. So it's definitely a tough one, but you know, it's a key factor that I feel a lot of times isn't as well represented in the industry in these days as it should be, that actual working professionals or former working professionals are top executives at companies. And, you know, being able to understand the creativity and the artistry side of the industry is very, very, very important. So coming from, you know, being an executive and also understanding exactly what the artist is going through on the tour, radio tours and in the studio and all that stuff, it really, really comes in handy, you know, because I'm able to talk to the artist. I know exactly what they want to hear and exactly what they need to hear. So it does come to play a lot. And even so, you know, it's great for myself because as a business executive, I might be working with someone on a deal that I might not have worked with or known because of my playing career, which will end up, or it has led up to me getting gigs for myself as a player as well. So kind of dipping my toes into multiple aspects of this business is ended up working out very, very well for me.
Yeah, it's very beneficial to know like all the sides of the spectrum almost, and to have that understanding, being on the business side and being on the performing side, what it all means, especially in different types of situations. So you play in a band called Pistol Day. How did Ted Nugent find you or approach you to play for his band?
So Pistol Day Parade, we released an album in 2013 that, you know, got a lot of success in the active rock market. And in 2014, we were about to launch our lead single on the record called Rockstar's Girlfriend. And our managers and radio promoters were like, well, we got to get you guys a really nice top bill tour that can coincide with this, you know, radio campaign so that we can really, really effectively push it. And so we ended up getting an open slot, opening for Ted Nugent on the Shut Up and Jam tour. So we toured with them for about 2.5 months. And you know, one thing led to another. The singer and the two guitar players decided they did not like touring. So after the Nugent tour was done, the band was dissolved while the single was number 19 on the active rock charts. So it's crazy. And I've told the story to so many people, and it mind boggles me that, you know, you work your whole life to get to a point, you're at that point, and you're told that, look, by the end of this year, you're going to have a number one hit single, and then decide midway, I'm done. It's just insane. But it ended up working out. And, you know, about 6 months later, I was sending some emails out to some industry folks saying, hey, look, I'm available. I'm looking for a gig this summer. And the two people that I contacted was Eric Singer from Kiss, and Eric Singer sent me Doc McGee's contact. So I emailed Doc McGee as well as Doug Banker, who is Ted's manager. And both kind of at the same time, you know, and I wasn't per se looking for the Ted Nugent gig. I was just looking for any gig. And they both kind of at the same time were like, well, we might have something for you. And I get a call from Ted Nugent a couple days later. And, you know, we had a great, great, great conversation about, you know, Detroit music and music as a whole and what he was looking for in a drummer. And a couple days later, I flew down to Waco, Texas, jammed with Ted and Greg, and I've been in the band ever since.
That's amazing, man. A great story. Definitely would be interesting to sit down and have an in-depth talk with Ted Nugent about his career and how he perceives things. I've seen a few podcasts with him as well, like the Joe Rogan podcast. And, you know, I've also was a fan of one of his shows. He was part of this one show called Supergroup. I don't know if you ever watched that before. So it was him.
Oh, yeah. I remember when it aired.
Yeah. It was an awesome show. And, you know, Doc McGee was on it, Sebastian Bach, Evan Seinfeld from Biohazard, and what was it, Jason Bonham. That was an amazing show. I wish you did that today. That'd be pretty cool to see that happen again. But so the new Ted Nugent record, you guys recorded in 5 hours. Is that what I hear?
Yeah. So we were slotted to be down in Waco, Texas for 2 weeks to do this record. And, you know, Ted had sent us, you know, just small preliminary demos that he did. And so we flew down there. We learned the tunes in like 2 days. And the plan was that the rest of the time we were down there, we were going to track one song a day. So we sat down to track the first song. We got done with it, did it in like 2 takes. And then Ted's like, oh, let's keep going. And we just went bang, 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 bang. And ended up finishing drums, bass, and rhythm guitar tracks in 5 hours. We all kind of just sat there looking like, oh, did we just recorded this thing? So what it ended up doing is actually lending us really, really more time to kind of experiment, listen back, try different things, because we were still there for, you know, another week and a half. So add some percussion, try, you know, a couple different bass things, try some different drum things. But about 98% of all of the drums, bass, and rhythm guitar tracks are done in 5 hours.
That's amazing. What did Ted think about all that?
Oh, he was just like, oh, perfect. Good. Because, you know, it's a different situation than the last couple records that Ted's done, because it hasn't actually really been his touring band. He's, you know, brought in different studio guys or whomever to do the record. So, you know, we at this point we had done 3 tours together. So we knew what was going to happen. We know how to follow each other. So it definitely makes things a lot easier. And being myself as actually really a studio player, and Greg Smith as a, you know, studio guy for many, many years, we know how to kind of take our touring drummer and bass player hats off and put on our session musician hats, you know. And but yeah, it was just a great experience and really, really fun record to do.
I think Fred Bear is one of my favorite tracks.
Yeah, that one was really cool. And you know, that's a perfect example of the us getting time to experiment, because it originally was just going to be just Ted acoustic guitar. And Ted had left the studio for the day, and the engineers and me and the bass player were still there. So we're like, you know what, let's mess around and add some stuff onto it. So added a bunch of percussion, and there's so much percussion on there that it didn't even make the track, because we were just literally fully experimenting. And you know, Greg added a really, really cool fretless bass track. And, you know, we were sitting there thinking, oh, you know, it'd be great to find a fretless bass. I wonder if somebody in Waco has one. And we literally opened a closet, and there was a fretless bass.
It was meant to happen. It was meant to happen, man.
Absolutely.
So what's next for Jason Heartless and the Ted Nugent Band?
Well, we're about to head back on the road for our typical summer tour. Starts July 19th in Pasadena, and then we go till August 31st and end in Detroit. So, you know, do our normal coast-to-coast U.S. tour. And, you know, for myself, I'm kind of splitting my time between Detroit and Nashville, Tennessee, you know, doing sessions and stuff like that. So it's honestly, I think I'm more busy when I'm off the road than when I'm on the road.
Well, it's been a pleasure talking to you, man. I really appreciate it.
Absolutely. My pleasure.